We're visiting with Ry Curtis. He is the author of the book Kingdom Tide, a novel that was released last month. Very interesting story and the way he wove the characters together. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But first of all, Ry, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You know what really caught my attention at first before I even started reading the book is the letter that you send out to booksellers and readers. Would you mind talking a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was asked to write a letter, and I decided that I guess I should give a little background about how I first decided to write this story. And it kind of started from a pretty sad point in my life where I lost somebody I cared about, and I began to think of stories that might be a good way to discuss that. And I thought, well, it would be a good way is, finding somebody that is pretty vulnerable and lost in a very real sense, and then trying to discuss that as a way of understanding grief. But I realized that I had quite a lot more to say than just that. So it kind of expanded from that point.
And you grew up in Texas, correct?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in a cattle ranch in Amarillo, Texas, or outside of Amarillo, Texas, in Clarendon.
One of the things that caught my eye also about this letter is what you discussed about your dad and the fact that your dad was born in 1937 and he had a lot of books that were there available to you for you to read. And if I remember correctly, like when I was a kid, my grandpa had all these great books, and of course, a lot of them were way above my level. But I just always admired these books and just how interesting it was that my grandpa had such a diverse collection.
Yeah, it's been pretty helpful for me to be able to go out there and be on the ranch and then see all these dusty old books that, you know, I don't think he reads them. They just sit up there, and they're all very, you know, particular. I haven't been able to locate them online, like quite a few of them. They're just old, mostly published by the local universities around there for various small histories of tiny events that have occurred long ago, only important or interesting to the people in the region. But I find them pretty, you know, interesting because there's so much to learn from how these people decide to really put a lot of onus on very small events that meant a lot, but not you know, it's hard to really find a lot of people. I don't see these books anywhere else, and so I've just spent so much time trying to comb through them and find anything interesting to say from those books, you know.
We're visiting with Ry Curtis. Ry has a novel out called Kingdom Tide. It's explores the lives of two women. One of them is a sole survivor of an airplane crash, and the other one is a troubled park ranger who is leading a rescue mission to find 72-year-old Cloris Waldrop. When you were growing up in Amarillo, did you find out, like through some of your dad's friends, your family, or even some of the books your dad had, developing some of the characters that you introduced us to here, like Cloris and Ranger Lewis?
Yeah, I knew, you know, I mean, fiction, there's often characters that are amalgamation of all these different people that you've met over the years. And I found a lot of people that affected me subconsciously found their way into the story. And, you know, I have quite a few characters that I know point directly to some people, but mostly I took inspiration from a lot of the, you know, my dad's old, so I have a lot of family and friends that are quite old too. And so I've spent a lot of time around the geriatric set, and I've had kind of a lot of influence coming from that to deal with putting together Cloris. And then, you know, I was raised by two women, and my mom came out of the closet back in the early 90s. And so I had a lot of influence from that, in particular regarding to Ranger Lewis. And so I think, you know, there's elements of growing up in that region that have definitely, have caused me to write this story.
Well, when the book opens up and we're introduced to, you know, the airplane, what's going on, and Cloris refers to her husband as Mr. Weldrip, and she talks a little bit about, you know, going back and when they met, going to church. Somebody else from church reminds her of somebody else, and then all of a sudden, you know, when this tragic event happens, you find that Cloris basically just pulls herself up from her bootstraps and just says, "I'm going to do this."
Yeah, yeah. She takes a lot of strength from what she's learned over the years from her parents and growing up in that culture of religion and kind of the Texas stoicism that exists there. But, you know, what I found interesting and wanted to do was kind of use that as a platform for understanding doubt and all the doubts that she has with regards to the way that she'd always lived. And, you know, growing up in an area that is dealt largely in black and white and that things are very often devoid of nuance, she has to then be put into a situation where she has a lot of time to contemplate the nuances of her past and then to deal with a lot of what she thinks about her own mortality and what she decides is important to try and save her life for, you know. So I think that, you know, that region is a good kind of base for her to have grown up in because it has a lot to do with trying to understand doubt. And that's really what I wanted to do, is put somebody that would not normally have these thoughts in a situation where they were confronted with them in a very aggressive way.
We're visiting with Rye Curtis. Rye is the author of the novel Kingdom Tide. It's a story about two women. One is a sole survivor of an airplane crash, and the other one is the ranger who is leading the rescue mission to go out and find her. That is Ranger Lewis. You talked about Cloris and perhaps what she found out when she was growing up, the way she was raised. And as you mentioned, you know, living out on a ranch and growing up with people in Amarillo, other parts of the panhandle, she probably saw some things that were pretty tough to stomach because of they didn't have all the technologies and everything else that we have now. But when she runs across some of the victims in the plane crash, I mean, the way you write it, you describe exactly what she saw, and it doesn't seem to faze her that much.
Yeah, well, I think that goes into, like I was saying before, part of this Texas stoicism where I've just known so many people there back home that have just a very dry, deadpan way of discussing anything remotely tragic or funny. I mean, tragedy and humor are dealt with into the same hand, it seems like, often. And I think that that's how she deals with things. And I mean, in a lot of ways, that comes from my father. He's quite a bit like that, too. I recall many times where he's a surgeon. And so I remember he would watch replays of his surgeries that he had recorded. And I remember things coming across them when I was pretty young. And he would just discuss it with me in a way as if he were discussing fixing a washing machine or something, just to try and take a lot of the, the mystic or violence out of this procedure that he was doing. And so he kind of is part of Cloris in that way, where she's pretty well adept at dealing with strong bouts of violence.
We've been talking about Cloris Weldrip. She is one of the main characters in your novel, Kingdom Tide. Let's talk a little bit about Ranger Lewis. Tell us about her.
Well, she's kind of an amalgam of all these people that I knew growing up in the gay community in Amarillo, Texas. And you know, it's a hard thing for somebody to come out in a very conservative area. And so I think that I wanted to have her be this repressed, sorrowful person who's not even sure of what she's doing in a lot of instances. She's just moving kind of under an impetus that she can't really describe, and I think that that's often the true definition of depression. And so she's just moving under her own steam and doesn't know why. And so I wanted her to be an intense counterpoint to Cloris, who's often seems to be taking charge of her own agency in a very real way, where Deborah Lewis is trying to do that, but running up against a lot of systemic issues that keep her from doing so. And she's dealing with a lot of her own substance abuse, and everything on her end is supposed to be very exaggerated so that you feel it a lot, in the sense that she's not going to be able to overcome anything. I wanted it to feel very hopeless. So she's kind of a counterpoint to Waldrop in that way.
We're visiting with author Ry Curtis. Ry is the author of the novel Kingdom Tide. Tell us a little bit about, are we allowed to perhaps talk a little bit about one of the other characters, Stephen Bloor?
That character is very much not a villain, but somewhat like that. I wanted him to come across as very problematic and troublesome to understand in a real way that is the way that, you know, Deborah Lewis doesn't have any real grasp on him either. And I think he's pretty much meant to cause her some problems. I think that's his main goal.
When we find out that Cloris is out there lost in this wilderness, which the forest straddles the area between Montana and Idaho. It's 1,600 square miles or acres. But as Cloris starts walking off, trying to do whatever she wants to do, she also runs into some other situations and some other people. And I don't want to give away, the spoiler here, but if there's something that you want to share about her, once she gets her bootstraps up and she leaves the airplane site.
Well, yeah, she's pretty much, on her own, and the wilderness serves as a place of contemplation for her more than anything else, and she has to come across a person out there that challenges a lot of her notions about morality and about perspective, and I wanted that to be as much of a wilderness for her to have to deal with in the physical world as for her to have to wrestle with these somewhat philosophical quandaries that she comes up against. So, yeah, it's a tough place out there in the Bitterroot.
And the chapters that you, because you take us back and forth between Cloris and Ranger Lewis, what's going on there. But it seems like most of the Cloris chapters, they're funny, dark humor in some of those areas. And yeah. It's just very, very well done first-person narration.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, I mean, I think, again, it was kind of, like I say, tragedy and humor go hand in hand with me often. It's always in the same place. And I read the book as being sourly funny through the whole thing in a lot of places, that perhaps many people wouldn't even pick up on. I don't know. I would hope that it's funny.
There's another character that we haven't talked about, and that is Stephen's daughter. Would you care to talk about her, about Jill?
Yeah. Jill has a father that doesn't understand her at all and thinks that she's slow, and she isn't at all, but she has a speech impediment that further distances herself from other people. And I like her because she ends up being an interesting companion for Ranger Lewis, and also a good way for the book to discuss particular themes about sexuality and love and whether or not they go hand in hand. And so I think that she is very pretty integral.
We're visiting with author Rye Curtis. Rye is the author of the novel Kingdom Tide. We talked a little bit about this at the beginning, but I want to go back again to your growing up. And you talked about your father's books, but have you always been interested in reading? And did you ever consider that someday you would be a writer?
Yeah, I always did read quite a bit when I was growing up. I spent a lot of time on my own because I was raised essentially as an only child. I have half siblings, but they're considerably older than I am. And so I was out there in the country with a lot of books. And so that's pretty good for me because I think it programmed my mind to want to do little else than to make up stories. So, it was always a source of entertainment for me to write. Now I'm very lucky that I can continue doing that.
One of the things that a lot of times people pick up a book, they'll look at it, they'll start reading, okay, that was good, or I wish it didn't end that way. But it seems now that book covers are what draw readers to the book. And Kingdom Tide has a very interesting cover on it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. They, Little Brown did a great job. Also in the UK, there's another cover that is fantastic coming out. It came out in the UK on Fourth Estate yesterday, and that's a great cover too. But the one that is out on the Little Brown one in the USA is very good. Greg Kulik did that one, and I really like that. Yeah, the two faces in the river.
Yeah, that's what really caught my eye. I go, wow, this is interesting. And at first, I didn't see it until after I took a look. And wait a minute, there are two faces there, and there you are.
Yeah, it's pretty clever.
In this modern day of social media, we have so many ways to entertain ourselves or get information. And so when people pick up a book to read, sometimes it's either for school, for work, but sometimes not for pleasure because they're either on their smartphones or on their tablets or on their computers doing whatever. Has the social media changed perhaps the way you as a writer approach your readers?
That's an interesting topic for me because I have never had social media really until now when I was, suggested that I should have some presence online in order to help, people know who I am. So I actually had never participated in it and somewhat willfully so because I don't fully get it the way a lot of people do, and I don't like to have my life constantly integrated with other people's, and so it is very new to me, and I don't know that it is good for the way we interact with literature or possibly any media, because it seems to create an almost disposable nature of content. The people are easy to dismiss things and flick through things, and I don't know. I'm not sure what it does ultimately in the way in which we interact with literature, but I'm not so certain that it's positive or beneficial.
So did your publisher, Little Brown Company, did they say, well, you need to do this because we need to reach out? Authors need a Facebook page. Authors need a Twitter account. Authors need to be on Instagram. And then authors need to use Audible or audiobooks because there's another way to reach them.
Yeah. They suggested that I participate in some of those, on some of those platforms. And, as of now, I've set up a Twitter and an Instagram, and that's it, I'm not that involved, but I think it's a good way to try and reach people, but I don't necessarily understand it or am very good at promotional aspects of my life, so I don't really involve myself too much with it.
We're visiting with author Rye Curtis. His novel is Kingdom Tide. Have you had any book signings or gone home to Amarillo, and what do they think of this?
Week after next, I'm going back to Amarillo. Well, I'm going to Colorado first, then I'm going to Amarillo. And I'll have some signings and some readings in both places. And it's, yeah, I mean, I've had some readings here in New York. I've got two coming up next week. And then, but it's all pretty new to me. I've always just been kind of on my own working and not had anybody shine a light on me. So it's interesting, and we'll see how it goes.
In the letter that we described at the beginning of the interview, you said that perhaps the beginning of Kingdom Tide started, when you were growing up. But at what point did you actually sit down and say, I want to write this novel?
It was several years ago now, and I think it was at a time that I, as I mentioned, was pretty low, and I had decided, I had finished another novel just before that hasn't been published, that I, was thinking, well, I want to try something entirely different. And so that was part of the impetus, too, is that I've always thought, well, I'm just going to keep writing novels just as long as I could to see what happens. And so I sat down and thought, well, this is the next one, and planned it out pretty well beforehand, before even putting any words to paper. I spent a lot of time doing research and reading particular things that I wanted to find a way to include in the story, even if it's in the kind of skeletal structure of the story. I spent a lot of time researching.
So tell us a little bit about the research that went into setting the scene in this the Bitterroot Forest, the wilderness, because you mentioned you're going to Colorado in a couple of weeks, and people there and in northern New Mexico, there are a lot of forests there, and people might say, well, he didn't get this right, or he didn't get this right. So
yeah.
I would imagine your research, you had to know exactly what sounded real.
Yeah, but it's interesting for me, too. I like things to have a ring of authenticity, but I also want there to be this almost, parabolic nature to the story. I want it to seem as if it's got a fable in there. And so I don't necessarily want it to be, oh, well, this is exactly how this, that kind of tree would grow there specifically, or, the weather was right on that day. there's certain things like that I do like to include, but primarily, once you have a gist of what you want to achieve, then I think in fiction you can run with it. Unless it's for something that really requires a specific connection to the real world or to some verifiable incident in history, or, I think that's what's interesting about fiction, is that you can create a near fantasy world in which characters behave authentically but not realistically. Because if you try and achieve realism, I always find that there's some kind of, I have a disconnect when I read with fiction like that, that it's almost as if it's trying to attempt something that's impossible for no reason.
Some other authors have said, well, fiction and the purpose of a fiction or a novel is to draw you into another world, to draw you into use your imagination. And I guess that's your point there. Perhaps it could be the fact that, okay, it doesn't have to be exactly the way it's supposed to be, but this is a book and this is a story and we want to be drawn into it.
Yeah, and, there's the old adage that, reality is stranger than fiction, and so anything that I can write that has a ring of truth about it, I want it to be bizarre. I'm very interested in things being almost hyper-real or have a surrealistic kind of undercurrent. So the research that I did specifically was meant to anchor it in a place that I could then elevate to some surreal plane.
So some authors say it's the hardest part about writing is just sitting down and getting that first sentence out. And some authors have said that first sentence is very important because that's what draws people in, much like a musical hook does for somebody who's listening to a song. But I would imagine that, like in your book, the ending would be just as tough.
Yeah. It's, like I said, I structured it pretty thoroughly before I put any words to the paper. And I wanted I began with the beginning, and then I also then began with the end at the exact same time. So I had written, I knew what was going to happen. And the readers do too, more or less. I mean, you can tell the reader in the first paragraph how much of the ending is going to be, because often what matters is how something happens, you know. So there's plenty to say about her adventure in the middle part, rather than just, you know, the beginning and the end being the most important. And I think that, you know, I had ideas about the way I wanted it to end, and none of that really changed, actually, from when I first came up with the idea. The ending was always the same.
And what about the narrative? Did you decide from the beginning that you were going to be switching back and forth?
Yeah, I've always thought that would be good, because I wanted it to be a little bit complicated in that way. I wanted it to have offer a bit of a challenge, where you have a more traditional first-person narrative happening in some ways. It's then has this counterpart that is almost working against it and challenging the other narrative. And so, you know, I wanted it to have both halves pretty much from the beginning.
And Rai, you've had some very good reviews, not only online, but on the book cover from a lot of other readers, lot of other authors.
Very happy about that.
And also Oprah tapped you as a top book for January.
Yeah, it's been exciting to see how this all works, and I'm very grateful to the people that have said nice things about it.
Well, Rai, we want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, and I wish you the best.
Yeah, thank you very much, Louis. I appreciate it.
We've been visiting with Rai Curtis. His novel is Kingdom Tide, and this is published through Little Brown & Company. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Jacqueline Torres. Our producer is Alex Dominguez. You've been tuned to The Book Club. I'm Louis Sines.